Ashgrave, an offshoot of the podcast of Ice and Fire. This is the fifth podcast in our series rewatch of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica. I'm your CAG, Drew, call sign Wargasm on the forums. Today's discussion will contain spoilers for everything up to Season 1, Episode 8 of the series, as well as potential spoilers for all works of George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire. Later on, we will airlock our unsullied show watcher as we make the jump to spoiler-occupied space. Today joining me are...
It's Adam, also known as Drowned Snow on the forums.
This is Zach, call sign Alias on the forums.
This is Jackie, Joy Olivier on the forums.
This is Jeff, call sign Jeff14 on the forums, your resident unsullied.
Awesome. Great to have you guys. So, so today we're going to be covering Hand of God, and we're also going to cover Colonial Day. But, Jackie, why don't you tell us how you got into the series, and then also, like, who your favorite character is and least favorite character?
I don't remember how I got into the series, but I remember watching all of it on Netflix. Is it still on Netflix? I don't think it is, because I had
to. I don't think it is currently.
I don't know. It's somewhere on there.
I think I tried recently to watch it on there, and I couldn't find it. I remember the first time I watched it, my favorite character was Kara, but on this rewatch, especially the first episode, I was very, about her. Maybe Roslyn, actually, would be my favorite character so far in this rewatch.
Hmm. Yay, some Roslyn love.
Yeah.
She's the cat of the series.
That's a good comparison. Unfairly accused of many things.
Yeah, I just think that she makes the best choices that she can at the time. You know, I have a lot of sympathy for her.
And she is dying, so she's at least worthy of that.
Yeah, I remember the first time I watched, I was very annoyed with her for some reason. Especially in the first episode, I was just like, there's this lady and she's just upset and crying. What? And now that I rewatch, I'm like, oh man. Why did
she,
I feel that way?
She has cancer. Like, come on.
I don't know what's wrong with me.
It is a weird situation, though, right? Because she's obviously so upset about this in the wake of Armageddon, basically. But you can't, put away your feelings about your own imminent demise, despite the fact that, everybody else is also dead.
Right. Yeah, she gets the 1-2 combo of personal tragedy and, the apocalypse, basically. So she's got a lot to deal with. I'm surprised that she made it into the bathroom to go cry, And do you have a least favorite character?
I'm going to have to say Ellen.
Really?
I know last episode people were saying how, they really enjoyed her and stuff, but I think it's just this visceral reaction. I just can't help it. And I listened to last episode, and then I, caught up on everything, and I was like, yep, still hate her.
I didn't mind her at first, but she becomes so one note, and then later stuff that happens, it's just eh.
I think it's since I've read Game of Thrones, I have come to appreciate bad guys and stuff more. But she's just so selfish and so brutal, especially in these two episodes. You know?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to look at her actions, especially in Colonial Day.
So is she Cersei?
I think she's smarter than Cersei.
Yeah. More cunning.
Yeah, she actually can play people, and she's sneaky.
They should have had her running the black market in that horrible episode.
We'll get there.
I just hope one day that we get someone to join this call that's black market is my favorite episode ever. I just want to hear why.
No memory of that, unfortunately.
Oh, trauma.
Is it the trauma? You blocked it out.
Probably.
Shall we do Hand of God now?
Sounds good.
So we begin with the fleet 36 days in space. The fill-the-fuck-up light on the gas gauge is glowing orange. In space, you can't get out and push. The president is hallucinating on Colonial One at a press conference to discuss the fuel shortage. She ends up seeing snakes all over her hands and on the podium. Boomer and Crashdown discover Tilium, along with a Cylon-infested refinery. Adama makes the decision to take the Tellian from the Cylons. He consults Starbuck for some serious out-of-the-box thinking. The president does the logical thing and consults with a Geminis priest named Osha. Osha introduces the Book of Pythia, an oracle that tells of the exile and rebirth of the human race. In the book, it tells of a leader that has a bad trip and sees snakes too, but the leader dies of a wasting disease while leading the people on their way to their new home. Good thing Laura is perfectly healthy. Starbuck scraps Ty and Apollo's plan for one that will be less obvious to a race of machines. The plan hinges on being able to ignite storage pods that hold unstable tellium. Resident scientist, poker boss, and fandom massage, Gaius Baltar tells him exactly where to strike, but he makes the blind guess and admits it to Head 6 in the hall in front of passing crewmen. Adama cuts through Starbuck's bravado during a physical therapy session and probably blew out her knee in the process. Starbuck doubts Lee's abilities and advises him, don't frack it up by overthinking. On Caprica, Hilo and Sharon find a place to hit the hay. Sharon even pulls a Margie Gunderson. That's the, oh geez, I think I'm going to barf. Adama visits his son and gives him Granddaddy Adama's lucky lighter and a pep talk with extra feels followed up with the threat of violence. Meanwhile, on Caprica, Sharon and Hilo spy a pack of Centurions led by a six sporting a very trendy white trench coat and some 4-inch stiletto pumps. In the rain and muck, you ask? Yes, it's perfectly appropriate. They're close toe. Sheila then abandons their love nest. The combat op is on. Kara is having difficulty with the transition from pawn to player. Adama is an expert at dishing out exactly what people need. The Viper squad engages with the Cylons. The redshirt Viper pilot, Fireball, should have picked a different name. Lollipop, Mr. Tiddles, Sex Bomb. All of these are better than Fireball. Stubbs is also a horrible name. Magic 8-Ball says Doc Cottle is going to need a cut-down tray in the near future. A strike team is launched from the civilian decoy ships. The president is served a dish of need-to-know, courtesy of Adama. On the planet, Chuckles has his last laugh. Apollo takes Starbuck's advice and decides to fly through a mineshaft. His gamble pays off and his mission accomplished. The president gives Kara some feels. Bill gets his daddy's lucky lighter back. And meanwhile, in Vancouver of Baltar's mind, his ego goes through an expansion phase and then gives the best pickup line ever. I'm an instrument of God. Discuss. I like how, for on that last thought, how Six is kind of coaching him because he's like, I was, and she's like, no, R. You know, I am an instrument of God, which, you know, okay, great. He thinks he's Jesus, like, but, yeah, and he does the whole, he has his arms out, too, with, you know, his long hair and everything. I mean, the imagery is, like, a little bit heavy.
A bit, yeah.
My one note I had for this episode was, when Boomer and Crashdown discover the tellium, do we think that Boomer subconsciously went to this location? Because she knew that there was tellium there and they needed it?
I don't know. It feels like there can't be a coincidence to all the times the Boomer and Crashdown seem to come across the necessary resources they need. But I guess maybe there could be. But I think that is more likely that somehow she is able to find stuff because she's a Cylon.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Not necessarily meaning that it's part of like an intended result of something the other Cylons are wanting to happen.
Yeah, she's right. Like, subconsciously aware of it, and that's what made her choose those coordinates. But obviously the other Cylons aren't expecting it, because, you know, I honestly think that she's not aware of anything. Like, she just has intuitions on things that are Cylon in nature.
I think this episode does a really good job raising the stakes for all the characters. We have the stuff with Lee and his father, and kind of ratcheting that up and kind of giving us more context for their relationship, and giving Lee in general more character, kind of getting a sense of why he behaves the way he does. That is cool. And we get all the stuff with Rosalind, of course, with the snakes and the Pythia prophecy. And I think that all really adds a lot to me of who and what she is. And then we have, of course, Gaius with the hand of God stuff, I guess, the involvement with the greater mysteries of the series.
Yeah, this episode builds a lot of stuff, and this is kind of where all the mythology of the series kind of starts to come into play.
I forget who it was, but someone on a previous episode said that their reading of it was that he was just schizophrenic and invented her in his head. Was that someone who had watched the show before, or someone who had not?
I don't remember who said that. I mean, I don't think that possibility is out the door at this point, because he could still just be imagining all this. He could still be self-deluding and be, as Drew says, just extremely narcissistic in the way that he sees himself as usual, so that this could just be another piece of that.
Yeah, kind of, like, created this thing to help deal with, like, the trauma and the guilt.
Right.
Yeah, it's still a little ambiguous.
Justify his behavior in some kind of greater purpose.
I guess what confused me about, like, the Gaius 6 thing in this episode was her bringing up the prophecy. Because isn't that prophecy, like, from the human religion? And then she keeps telling him that there's one god, but they believe that there's, like, 12, right? Lords of Kobol.
I think there's clearly some kind of connection between the two, because, I mean, we'll see in a couple episodes that there's something going on with Kobol, the birthplace of the gods. There's something there with the Cylon faith, even if it's sort of like a proof of how, you know, much there's nothing to the human faith, but it's a piece of what's going on.
Okay, so you think, like, the two religions share some common ground?
Not necessarily, like, ideologically, but just in the greater mythos, they're both tied together.
Interesting.
One discrepancy that I kind of saw in the episode, too, is, you know, because when they're revealing Pythia to the president, like, she's never read Pythia or anything like that, and so it's, like, new to her, but she actually is devout enough to be consulting a priest, but then Gaius remembers it, like, from grade school, so which is it?
Right, that is a little odd. Maybe she just never got that lesson, I'm not sure. I think just to the point of how there's a connection between the two, it's clear that all of this has happened before, all of this will happen again, is a consistent message between the two versions of faith.
Any other thoughts on this episode?
Can I ask one question from Hand of God real quick?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Do we just assume that they can just mass produce the vipers, or do they ever, like, run into a problem where, like, oh no, we don't have any vipers left, or the 20 pilots that we trained?
Well, it's okay.
Yeah, that comes up.
Okay.
It comes up, but for right now, what you can say is the Battlestar Galactica had its full armament of ships and everything, plus it also had the extra wing of Viper, because the thing was going to be a museum. So they had a bunch of decommissioned Vipers. They basically have two wings worth of planes in that thing, and yeah,
they lost all their modern Vipers, except for Adama's, right?
Yeah.
I don't think they lost all of them. I don't think they did.
Everything they sent out in that attack didn't come back. They all got hijacked and blown up.
And then the other thing is, they had 140 Cylon ships approaching the Battlestar Galactica, and after the base got destroyed, all the Cylons are like, well, we're just going to turn around. Why wouldn't they continue to try to wipe out the Galactica?
Plot reasons.
Yeah, I know. It was like, oh, activate God now, God mode now, for all the pilots. But, like, oh, you can stop just pretending to die and dying. You know, like, it's a bit of a, yeah.
The series is not always good with these nitty gritty details. I think that there's a lot of times where it's really unclear where they're getting the Vipers, especially how frequently they seem to lose them. Like in the what's his name, Flat Top or whatever episode where all those people die and the ships and everything.
I would just say at this point, the Vipers are, I mean, they brought some in from other sources, and they're just, you know, they're retrieving what they can and rebuilding what they can, like, scavenging as much as possible.
I don't want to give the chief credit, though.
No,
you will later on.
But there will be one episode where you're like, I kind of like the chief, and it's next season. It's quite good. It's actually one of my favorite episodes in the whole thing, so yeah. You have something to look forward to.
I thought the plan was cool, except the whole Star Wars-esque trench run, random, let's go into the center of the Death Star and blow it up illusion of Lee.
Let's just go where Gaius threw the dart at the freaking map.
It was just like, oh no, that pissed me off too about Gaius. Like, I hoped he was wrong, but I knew he wasn't going to be.
I mean, I didn't mind it. I thought it was a good sequence. Even
I thought it was cool. I was just like, this is like Star Wars.
Yeah, but yeah, that happens.
So 8's pregnant, right?
It's tipped off when she's like throwing up from that.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote, all that radiation must be great for the baby.
God, meds. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, they've
got Cylon baby.
Better take your radiation pills or shots or whatever they are.
So is it this? Sorry, I can't remember. Is it no? It's the next episode where Hilo starts to put together the Cylon thing.
Yeah,
the human Cylon thing. All right. Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, this episode I think is just one of the best set pieces that the series has. Just the whole sequence on the Tilium planet moon thing was really well done. Again, we get to see Apollo finally doing something cool, which is nice, and the plan is actually pretty interesting with luring them out toward the Battlestar and then using the civilian ships to counterattack.
So what's your lemon cake rating, or your toaster rating, or whatever? How many radiation doses do you give this episode?
I'd rate this one pretty highly. I think that it's one of the stronger episodes. I generally really like the season one episodes. I'd give it like a 4 or 4.5 toasters, whatever things that we choose. Tillium sources.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, I had many more notes on this episode than the next episode. They were just very different in nature, like battle and politics. But yeah, I really liked this episode. Four pieces of toast.
The moment of pure like excitement when they finally get a victory is the viewer such a sense of relief because it feels like it's all going so poorly before now and they get this victory and it's just you really feel that palpable feeling with that moment in the war room and then in the hangar and the Adama music swells and it's all just very exciting and that's the kind of stuff that really gets me into BSG is those moments of human connection.
Yeah, that scene in the hangar where Adama tells him, you know, because you're my son thing, like, you know, like, every time I get all, like, teary-eyed, like, you know, like, I'm like, it's just, it's very, very touching.
Aww.
Yeah, I don't know. But, I give this one 4.5 Raider meat burgers.
All right.
How about you, Adam?
I mean, this is like a strong 4, 4.5. This is one of the better episodes for sure.
I guess I'll go to 4.5 just because of the stupidity with all of the Vipers, but it was still very fun to watch. It was a good let's get back into the series. And more importantly, after I've been cautioned by y'all that the black market or whatever has to be my low of the series. I'm very reluctant to use very low numbers like I did before.
Awesome. Okay. All right. So shall we move on to Colonial Day? Live from Cloud 9, we see a broadcast of Good Morning Flotilla. Laura laments the freedom of the press. Tom Zarek is appointed to Sagittarian seat on the interim quorum of 12. Dr. Baltar is also appointed to the quorum, representing Caprica. An ominous figure packs a gun in a suitcase. On Cloud 9, Colonel Ty snubs Zarek's offer of a handshake, but Ellen is more than happy to partake. The press is on pins and needles. Will she? Won't she? The president delivers a devastating handshake-air-kiss combo to Zarek for all to see. during the quorum session, Head 6 grants Gaius the benefits of an open relationship so he can bang the pantyless reporter. No feelings, though. Permission to be a dildo granted. Zarek motions for the election of a vice president. Gaius and Head 6 second the motion. Zarek is nominated by Virgon and Gemini's delegates. He then outlines his policies to the press. They all seem very sound. Lee then gets in a bar fight over what's on the radio. It leads to the discovery of the gun and that was shown at the beginning. Starbuck hooks the fleeing gunman with her cane and acquires the gun and a target. Meanwhile, on Caprica, Carl finally puts it together. The Cylons look like us. Good job, Carl. Back on Cloud 9, Starbuck puts her on her interrogator hat and lends Apollo her spare. They prove unsuccessful in getting anything out of Valance. The president wants Zarek's room bugged. Lee takes it upon himself to let Zarek know we got Valance. Ellen Ty then makes friends with Zarek and presumably gets him the information that he needs to get rid of Valance. Gaius enjoys some media attention and the opportunity to chastise Zarek. The president then realizes that he is the best bet to defeat Zarek. But that means that she has to shed her former nominee first. She then makes her move with Baltar in some bathroom politics, and unknowingly gives the pantyless reporter one hell of an exclusive. The vote results in a tie, which the president then gets to decide. Vice President Gaius Baltar's celebration party follows. We get treated to Kara in a dress, and Gaeta dancing with Boomer. He is so gay. Adama and Laura also share a dance. Ellen surprises Saul with a vacation she acquired through her relationship with Zarek. Back with Team Shilo, they prepare to steal a heavy raider, only there's a problem. A wild eight appears. Sharon shoots her copy, and then Hilo books it. That's Colonial Day.
I feel like this episode, and we'll probably get into it more in spoiler section, but I feel like this episode, the greatest strength of this episode is also its weakness in that it's so tonally and you know, plot-wise distinct from everything else in the series. And it's really interesting in the way, and we get to see a lot of stuff that we don't normally do, but it feels like a lot of this stuff doesn't end up amounting to much and doesn't end up really situating itself and fitting into the greater puzzle that is the series. But otherwise, like, it's a fun episode, if occasionally confusing and unclear at times, but it adds a lot to what the series is.
Yeah, it had some of it had a similar feel to the what was the name of the episode, the one where we meet Ellen,
right?
You know, like just quirky moments and things like that, like the whole bathroom scene with mm-hmm. Gaius was very in that house desperate housewifey feeling, you know, kind of. But I mean, it was there were a lot of fun moments, but it was kind of weird but cool because we got to actually get some idea of how the government works with the introduction of the Quorum. I'd like this episode.
How does the government really work?
Not well.
No, not particularly well. but it is super interesting to see. I mean, especially of course, Tom Zarek's, I feel, defining moment here where he gives a speech about the ways in which the current government and political and, you know, frankly, economic system do not suit the current paradigm where money doesn't matter, and the jobs people do, why do they do them? Essentially preaching some very Marxist communist rhetoric there. It's pretty heavy-handed. You know, we have to think about the community, not the individual. But I think that, you know, his point is well made. It's only that this is not the time and the place to enact that kind of sociological change, because there's the threat of obviously annihilation at any turn, so we can't afford to have this kind of social justice kind of thing.
Right.
And that's not even really what he's looking for. He just wants to get into power himself.
Yeah, right. I think that's true, that he doesn't necessarily buy into these concepts, and it's clear. I think Caius, his point is well made when he says that he has this dramatic personality makeover and people just buy it, and I think that it's clear that his rhetoric is just that. He's trying to sway people.
And there's a huge problem with the fleet. I mean, it's this refugee fleet, and resources are really low. But again, yeah, some people were on luxury liners and kind of have, you know, they have a lot to go around, at least temporarily. But eventually everyone's going to be in somewhat of a similar situation. But the problem is that there are whole ships that are just dumps. But I mean, what do you do? Like, everyone, I think, just kind of has to suck it up. But if you're preaching to people, you know, who are living in like the prison ship or something, you know, talking about how, hey, look, people over here, they got, you know, they're on cloud nine, they're in luxury, and they got bars, and, you know, it's kind of, you know, yeah, maybe rotate people through, you know, spread the wealth around a bit, I don't know.
Well, yeah. I feel like you feel a lot of sympathy for what Rosalind's trying to do in this episode, right? Because Gaius actually makes some really good points in her defense, which is basically just that nobody, you're not going to please everybody with the decisions you make. And she's just making the best decision she can. But obviously there's going to be a huge contingent of people that are going to be dissatisfied no matter what she chooses.
Yeah. Her mistake is, I mean, she should have just appointed a vice president like very early on in her presidency. I mean, the whole reason why she's president is because of the chain of succession. So you would think that maybe she might put some stock in that. So
yeah,
that would,
You would think, but like, really, it's true that they can't afford a regime change here. It's just, you know, purely practically, pragmatically, like, they can't afford anyone just getting their stake in what happens with the fleet, because she and Adama have built a relationship and a kind of important one to keep intact. So if a new person comes along and they're not in any way competent, and they want to try all these new policies, like that could be that simple for them to just be wiped out immediately. Like they almost need a dictatorship.
The civilian government and everything it's not as necessary as it's not as important on how that goes, because, you know, really they're still just trying to survive. You know, I mean, like, this is just barely over a month after the attacks, and it's one of those things. Yeah, they need to, you know, they're just trying to hold on to their old ways and keep that alive so that way, you know, people can get some normality and things. But, and I think Zarek's message is, you know, I think Marxist way of looking at things is great, but if anyone else had delivered that message, it would have, you know, I think they probably would have won. But, you know, since he's basically like the Unabomber, I feel like, you know, And I love that Gaius is just, he's so direct with the press. He's just like, he goes, well, I think you have a short memory. Like, this guy is not, yeah, I mean, he's very charismatic with the press, and he's loving it, every minute of it, too. His attention, he missed the limelight.
I think Gaius is one of the best characters in the series, just for complexity, and he's, like, so pathetic, but then he's so greedy, and then, like, gets so cocky so fast at the same time, and then just takes one little knock, and he's he's whimpering on the floor, you know? He's just so fascinating to watch.
I see a good opportunity for Jeff to come in if he can get his mic working.
I know, right?
What do you think about Caius, Jeff?
All right, well, I was just going to say, like, I know it's fucked up, but to be fair, the fact that, there really is a government's all a sham, and it's just because Adama's a nice guy and not a dictator, is really, let's say Zarek gets in charge, Adama can just say, fuck that, and jump the Palisar Galactica, and then the rest of the fleet would be fucked.
Oh, no, he wouldn't do that. He would just say, fuck that, and send some Marines and be like, well, I'm in charge now.
Yeah, but I think there's a reason beyond his morality that he doesn't do that, because I think
he doesn't want revolt.
Wait, like you said, Drew, it's important that there at least be the illusion of normalcy here. It's important that they at least believe that there is a real government in place that they've always had and that they can always trust. I think that if they didn't have that, as you say, Adam, there would be riots, and that would be the quickest way to this whole thing falling apart.
Yeah, but like when Zarek was talking about, like, why are people doing these jobs? Why are they doing this? It's like, yeah, he has a point, but what else can they do? Like, they shouldn't be trying to decide, like, rationalizing and service. They should just try to figure out how to survive, but it's kind of stupid what he's just saying that. Like, they should just sit quiet and be back. They're fucked. They're just,
they're not in a position to be like, okay, we gotta start worrying about making everyone's life better right now. Like, we don't really know if we're going to survive next week. Yeah. I mean, in a lot of, post-apocalyptic, disaster movies or whatever, just people just, they just do what needs to be done, and usually this doesn't come up, at least early on in that sort of situation.
And since it's been about 2 months since my last soapbox, I find Gaius to be very interesting. I just think he's an utter douchebag and deserves to die.
There we have it.
Well, that's probably correct.
It's definitely how I felt the first time.
He's one of those characters that, like, you start out loving to hate the guy, and I'd be interested to see how if your position changes on Gaius by the time we reach the end of all this, too, because, it's...
I don't expect it to get better for a while, I'll say that.
Right.
Like, just from my newbie perspective, were we supposed to assume that Zarek did actually send the assassin and he just didn't really give a fuck about him? Or was that just a different subplot and just a random thing that happened?
It's really unclear. I don't know if this is explicated further in the plan, but I do think that the theory, or at least the idea goes that yes, it was Zarek sent him, and then it was as simple as yes, Ellen somehow got his wrists slashed later.
Yeah, I do like how mysterious it is and everything, but obviously, I mean, if Ellen's getting a luxury suite, she just had to give the information on where he is, and of course, Saul, I'm sure, gets very drunk and spills a lot of classified information to her if she's pumping it for information, so to speak, so.
Do you think she got it from Saul, the location?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't think it's pumping that she's doing, though.
Well, she's got to talk while doing it. I mean, she could be doing the swirl.
Yeah. We'll get to
the swirl. True Light jumps right back on that.
There you go. Yeah, I find that the whole mystery is something that even now, after rewatching this series like so many times, I don't understand. Like, just for some reason, like, the pieces don't fit together. I guess it is as simple as she got the info from Saul and she cut the guy's wrists. I just, what is her plan here? Like, she exchanges that nod with Zarek at the end of the episode, and she's saying that she wants to advance Ty's position. What is she intending there?
She sees Zarek as the future. Like she's heard his words and everything, and she probably thinks that he's going to be a friend in a high place in the future. And she's trying to maybe actually sow some seeds to find an ally, a friend in a place where,
Yeah. I guess my inclination is to read more into it than that, and to think that they have some greater plan or intention. But I guess, it's as simple as just building up an alliance of sorts. Getting back to Colonial Day a bit, why is he such a dick in this episode? Like, I realized that in the interrogation scene, he's playing bad cop, but why does he, like, pick a fight with that dude and just, like, he's being such a dick to him for no reason?
Because he's an idealist. He's very...
But he calls him, he's like, you're subhuman. He literally calls him subhuman in this scene. Like, why is he such an asshole?
Yeah, he could be from Toron or something like that. I mean, I don't know. It's just the way that they, or what planet did that big odd job looking guy?
I guess like one of the poorer ones. Yeah, like Sagittarius.
I did think it was funny, like how Lee would always like support Zarek when it was either Rosalind and everybody talking, but then like they're at Cloud Nine, then he just became a dick and hated whatever Zarek said. He's like, well, Zarek makes some good points.
He just feels out of character to me for 90% of this episode. Like, we get, I feel like, great Lee moments in Hand of God, and then here he is just, like, punching people and picking fights, and it feels like it was kind of a forced result to get to the fight sequence itself, and just to have that.
Yeah, well, and the whole thing, the whole reason why Zarek even knows that they have that guy is because he just decides to go and whisper in Zarek's ear, so the whole reason that that guy's wrist gets slashed is because of Lee, but that...
Yeah, what a dummy.
Do we really think Leo is ever smart?
He ain't street smart. That's the problem.
Oh, but the whole... God, I'm just rehashing everything I missed. I did, like, think it was a good scene when Lee threw back the lighter to Adama.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Is like, that's such a good Lee moment, and then all of a sudden he's back to his old shitty ways in this episode, which is fine. Like I said, this episode feels a little bit out of context from the rest of the series, but it's fun, I guess, in isolation. And it, yeah, another weird one when he's, I mean, again, I guess bad cop, but should he just be choking that dude?
Sure, why not?
Well, and yeah, like, it's another, you know, okay, so he's captain of, or he's the, oh, why am I spacing?
CAG?
He's the CAG. He's CAG at this point. He's also, well, now an interrogator. So he's just like Starbuck, where he's starting to get a lot of hats that he gets to wear. Oh, you know, like, okay, why don't... Oh, yeah, and you're also bodyguard to the president, too, when she's down there at during the quorum. Like, Starbuck and Lee are right behind her, like, you know, like Secret Service. Like,
many more hats to come for Lee in the future.
Yeah, he needs a hat rack.
I was like, why are your pilots on security? It doesn't make sense.
I mean, I guess you would want officers or whatever, maybe, but no, like, you could have just Marines, which maybe Galactica doesn't have that many Marines. I don't know.
They seem to have an endless supply of Marines.
Yeah.
Because they don't have faces or character, so they can't.
They're just always bringing in more people. They're like, oh, we lost 20 Marines. All right. Go conscript some people.
Do we want to discuss anything about what's going on Caprica?
I mean, I think it's set up for the finale mostly, right? There's not a whole lot to say about it. But yeah, it's interesting that Carl finally puts it together.
Well, he doesn't even have to put it together on this one. Like, I mean, like, another one fucking walks out.
Yeah.
I might skip through the Earth sections or go to the bathroom during that.
Not a fan.
Not a fan at all.
It was surprising to me how slowly that plot line moved, like, through the first season. Like, I didn't remember that whole plot line taking an entire season. Like, I thought it was, like, a couple episodes.
It gets better from here, I think. I think it picks up from here on out, so.
Yeah, yeah, starting next episode, it's like, oh, okay, cool. That's how these two are, you know, connected. So, like, you know, otherwise it'll be just... Hilo running and slowly running out of radiation meds and then dying.
That would be one way to do it. I like the final sequence of this episode before all this, I guess, with the party. I think that is one a really strong scene all in all. Just all the different characters around doing stuff. Adama sharing his dance with Laura.
Fun. Yeah, rewatch the thing. It is so fun. The way that Gata is dancing with Boomer. He's just like, la la la. It's just like, he's so not into it. He's just, yeah. So I don't know if they knew they were going to make him a gay character, but maybe they rewatched the scene. They're like, oh, yep.
There you go. It also makes you wonder, like, the entire command structure of the Battlestar Galactica is on this party ship. What would happen if the Cylons attacked right now?
I thought that too.
Is Zuala there?
They do this
often. She is there, yes. She is there dancing with Billy.
So it's what, like, just Kelly is there on the bridge? He's got the... I mean, not on the bridge.
But there are other, like, captains and majors and stuff that, you know, I'm sure can handle it. But whenever they're on another ship and there's an attack, it seems like, I'm going to get back to Galactica, and then, like, oh, they're in the CIC. You're like, huh. That happened quick. Unless the plot, like, demands you know, a travel scene or something.
Yeah, like if the Cylons had showed up during that ball, like they would be so screwed.
Oh, I was just like, or during the Hand of God, like the attack, and Adam's like, I need to get to the CIC, and he just like walks out slowly.
He's old.
It's like you think he would need to be there like the entire time, even though Ty's there.
Yeah, have Ty there or have Adama be there. You have to have one of them at the top at all times, basically. That would make a lot of sense.
I don't know naval regulations or anything very well. Like, my uncle's like a captain in the Navy, but I think, like, I mean, usually you've got like the ready room and stuff. It's like right near the, you know, and usually the captain of the first officer is there, and then at night they have another senior officer. Like, but there's always like one of like a very small number of people that are close by. Like,
right,
you wouldn't take the top dozen officers on the ship unless you were docked and like send them somewhere else. Like, it just wouldn't work.
And I did get the impression that Ty was in the CIC during the attack. I just thought it was silly that they all like essentially knew the plan. Why did they all have to sit in there? It would be more pertinent to sit in the CIC.
It's like, Boxy, you have the CIC.
That would be good.
All right.
Yeah, for Colonial Day, I'd give it like a 3.5. Like I say, there's a lot of good stuff in there, but I feel like, yeah, in the greater context, like it kind of doesn't stack up.
Yeah, I give it a 3.5 for me. It was good. It felt a little bit foreign to the other episodes, but not necessarily entirely in a good way, like you said, Zach. You know, but then again, I don't really care about the civilians too much, too, so.
Civilians, who are they anyway?
Right.
I'd probably give it about the same, just because I felt like there was a lot of, like, convenience in this episode that bothered me. Like, just how we already talked about, like, them being the security detail, and, oh, he picks a fight with the guy, you know, that leads to the discovery of a gun, and stuff like that. But other than that, it was pretty good, and I do think that it introduces well, like, because I feel like the series is very political, and it kind of helps introduce that early on.
Yeah, I just think they don't necessarily know how to do those politics, like the whole moment with the handshake, like, will she handshake him? Like, it's like, is it that important? Does it matter that much?
I don't know. I mean, I give it a 3, because like, this is one of those episodes where, like, sometimes I watch it and I'm like, oh, this is the worst. And sometimes I watch it and I'm like, oh, no, this is actually a good episode. So I can't, like, I don't know what, my mood or something? I don't know. But sometimes I enjoy it, sometimes I don't.
I'd probably give it a 3, too. I kind of got annoyed of how, I forgot his name, but, like, the gas bag guy got so mad at Roslyn. Because like, just two episodes before, he didn't want the job, like, at all.
And the fact that you can't remember his name is telling.
Yeah, and you call him the gas bag. It's so fucking awesome.
We clearly want him to win. Like, we clearly want Rosalind to stay in power. And then the other thing is, how little Adama was in that episode very much, like, detracted from my overall desire to watch it. Even though I thought that politics were going to be interesting, and then, like, it just fell flat for me.
Jeff, what's your take on the Book of Pythia reveal, too? We covered that one. I'm interested in to see what the Unsullied has to say.
That was such bullshit. I was like, whatever. that's just like religious crap. I'm just like, what? No. Like, they just throw that in, and then like the whole guy's like, oh, this is weird. Like, I just made a wag. What the fuck? I'm scared shitless. And then at the end of the episode, he's like, yeah, I'm the chosen one, motherfucker. He's like a really quick turnaround.
He's a quick turnaround kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Get back in that bathroom stall.
That was very funny, though. Yeah.
A lot of the show, there's so many bathroom scenes. Like, I feel like that's kind of unique, like, to the show.
Most television and movies don't do bathrooms. It seems like they actually take the time to include that.
Well, there's a lot of brushing teeth scenes.
Yeah.
They got that co-ed, you know, the co-ed sinks there, so it's like everybody talks while brushing their teeth.
It's good blocking for exposition.
It's just like Ally McBeal.
It's the old locker room from like Top Gun or whatever.
Right. And Gaius seems to have all the best bathroom scenes, that's for goddamn sure. Or Mr. Nice Gaius, and then we get the exclusive.
What about Billy that one time when he walked into the bathroom on accident?
Fuck Billy.
Aww. Billy's the best.
I want to thank everyone for joining us. I want to thank Adam, Jeff, Zach, and Jackie. Next time, we're going to cover the season finale for season one of Battlestar, so definitely look forward to that. And if you want to join the conversation, please find us on the Podcast of Ice and Fire forums under Listener Podcasts. And yeah, we look forward to having anyone join the conversation. So we'll be discussing Kobol's Last Flamings, part one and two, next episode. So yeah, can't wait for next then.
Cool. Thank you,
Drew. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Anytime. You are welcome here anytime in my Viper squad. So. All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
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 See you.
What about Billy that one time when he walked into the bathroom on accident?
Fuck Billy.
Oh, no, you don't wear a skinny tie with a long collar.
He tries, guys, he tries.
What's the difference between a long collar
okay,
and a short
what?
Well, no, if you look
that's at... what you're giving Billy crap for.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I work in a department store. What can I say? I'm like, that's not... You should do a full Windsor with a regular tie on a when you have a collar like that so it fits because his tie is too small for that. So he's got these big long, all of his collars on his shirts, like he must have liked the 70s. But if you're going to have a shirt like that, you need to do it, yeah.
What about Billy that one time when he walked into the bathroom on accident?
Fuck Billy.
You tie this back into Battlestar. The only sports in that are pyramid and boxing.
And strip poker.
All right, of course.
Pyramid is all.
Is that pyramid?
Pyramid is.
Pyramid is kind of like
it's like
basketball.
Yeah, it's the basketball basically.
I don't know what they were trying to do. Like if you ever see them like behind the scenes trying to explain it, and you're like, no. Like the less we know about pyramid, the better.
Yeah, it's not as fun as Quidditch.
Yeah, that's kind of like it's almost like any fictional sport because a lot of authors maybe aren't into the sports or. You know, like, whatever. So the rules they come up with, you're like, this would never be the way it works. You know, like, scoring or whatever, but...
Yeah.
You could just say basketball is really popular in your world and have them play that.
Now we need some weird thing. Like, our cards look like hexagonal.
I was just thinking, like, our paper has no edges. Where do the edges go, Mom? I mean, they get recycled into more paper. The edges, like, go to the temple of the gods and they burn them. That's like, it's a religious thing. The gods want all of our edges, corners to Pythia.
Yeah, it is interesting, though. It's like how far into world building they went. They're like, okay, well, if, you know, I mean, these are humans, so we're going to take a lot of things out of human culture. We're going to base it off Greek mythology and all that stuff. But then they went through, they're like, yeah, someone's like, I'm not going to, you know, Ronald D. Moore, don't you cut any corners with redoing this thing. I'm going to cut all the corners.
Epiphany moment there.
Yeah, I'm going to cut every corner, even in boxes.
What about Billy that one time when he walked into the bathroom on accident?
Fuck Billy.
Honestly, there's something like really aesthetically interesting to me about the cards that look like that way. Like, I would want to hold those. I don't know.
What? Yeah, I
no, it is. It's cool. It's just super like not practical.
Cards.
Yeah, it's true. You know when they play like their poker game, their cards look all weird.
Oh, with the cut corners.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet they're a bitch to shuffle.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, on their poker game, so, like, we don't even know any of the hands or anything like that, right? It's like, that full colors is like...
Full colors, yeah.
Yeah, full colors, yo.
Or is full colors a flush?
Probably. How many colors are there?
Is full colors, like, the opposite of a flush, but it has the same value as a flush? Like, do you have all the different colors? I don't know.
It's really fucking easy to get, though.
But it wins.
We know that, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's called Triad. Full colors is the highest hand. Prince High Red beats up. Three up is less. Three on a run. We don't know where this goes, but it seems relatively high. Like, this is like piecing this together from previous episodes.
Prince High Red.
That's right, Prince High Red. Yeah, that's the card that's bent, right?
What about Billy that one time when he walked into the bathroom on accident?
Fuck Billy.
We have a Bina appearance in just a second.
Yes.
But she's, yeah, they're going to moot crash us. So.
Crash?
They,
yeah. She's having a moot right now. So I think it's her and Pop's 88.
Oh, this is going to be weird.
Hey, guys. This is Cockney Meets. You've got Calvin, Noah, Pop's 88. Neil, Aaron Ease, Ted Odd, Silence, Tanya, the podcast bard, Image Baby just left. Hey, how's it going?
Great.
And Rhaegar. Can you see Rhaegar on the webcam?
Imogen just disappeared, you said? Mysterious.
Yeah, Imogen can give you various types of abuse. There you go.
How do we flip this again?
There's a little badge.
Which one?
Flip it.
Oh, technology.
Are you here?
I'm getting involved.
Hang on. All right. We here.
That Starbuck dies.
Wagwan, one, my guys.
Jesus. I'm so confused.
Is that one of these intellectuals down here?
I don't know. Who's the intellectual? I recognize him. Who's that? And then the other one, he's got glasses on. He don't look intellectual.
Somebody needs to have some...
This is so legal.
Publicity photos.
Yeah, that PR snap right there. All right, let's have a look. Who's this? So who have we got on here? Jeff, that one's done for us.
What?
Nah, Jeff.
It's Drew.
All right. Who else is
Drew? What's going on, Drew? Is that Drew? Is that Wargasm? That?
Yes, it is. Wargasm on the board.
Yes, Wargasm. How you doing, son?
Somebody straight you.
Yeah, he fucked up. Someone fucked up.
He's like, I don't want to talk to these people.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my beer, man!
No, it's all right, mate. It's all right. I saved it. Put it on the other side.
Jesus.
All right, hang on.
There's a chance we might have been drinking. Only a small chance.
No one's been drinking here. It's before 9 o'clock. We don't start drinking till after 10. Tell you.
In the morning, right?
Yeah. Time zone, innit? Time zone, boys.
How many yards of ale have you had?
We've had 4 yards of ale, and three lengths of rum. Does that equate the old metric system?
Definitely.
Good. I'm glad.
Yep.
Wait, we're metric system. You're the fuckers with yards and all that.
Right.
Yeah, we're not anymore. Now we've left the fucking EU.
Yeah, we can do what we want. We're at the EU. We can have yards back.
Oh,
we
God.
Can back to the Yanks.
It's lovely.
What are we doing? There's both of us here.
Yeah. Well, Pops, I always thought that you actually were super hands.
You have no idea how much of a compliment that is, mate.
Oh God, that makes me David Mitchell. Actually, do you know what? I take that.
Oh my God.
I take that as a fucking compliment, to be honest.
Who's your Jez? No, Jez, not Jizz, Jez.
Same thing, really.
No, no, it's really not. If you've seen the show and you listen to the podcast, all right?
Have you done
coming
a bad
out.
Thing?
It's been threatened for about a year now, right?
What, Jez?
Jez.
Is that what you said? <Yeah. laughs>
Shut up. Don't tell her a word. She knows nothing about this. Nothing.
Yeah, you're much cooler in real
don't
life.
Don't put this on YouTube because she'll find it.
I'll put that on YouTube.
Don't put this on YouTube. No videos, all right? No one's recording the video, right?
All right.
Otherwise, I'm backing out of this. Yeah. You can only get my sexy nose in profile.
There we go.
There we go. Hang on.
Drew,
there.
I hope you're recording this. You need the evidence.
I have the audio.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect, Drew. You're a legend, mate. For days and all that, mate, I'm there. I'm there.
Thanks.
I'm with you.
Have you told Drew about the gay fanfiction Imogen's writing about the two of you?
So apparently Imogen's writing some gay fanfiction about me and Kelvin.
Yeah, but
yeah, that
to
makes
be honest,
sense.
Would you tone down from real life?
Would you be interested in that?
Oh, sure. She, yeah. Yeah, if she
would
needs
to... Because she was keen. I mean, like, she needs some support from this. It was just a joke that Bina made, but if you're keen, go for it.
Crack. Oh, sweet. I'll help her with the research and development portion of the, of the writing.
Are you coming to England? We've seen it, like, firsthand.
Hey, champagne time.
Champers, wait, we're getting the champers out. Hang on.
Orgasm coming
young
to England.
Work these phones.
Fuck that, I have no idea.
There we go. The champers is out. You're all on camera, the champers is out. Oh fuck, I'm one step behind. Bean is living the dream, boy.
It's after 9 o'clock any day of the week.
I like Bina's patio furniture.
Oh, you can click the name who it is.
Adam, Drew.
Oh,
who
this
the
is...
fuck's Zach K? Who's Zach K?
Guys, come on. Can't we make our Skype names our fucking forum names?
What?
So...
Zach is alias. Adam is drunk. No.
Zach's alias. And I'm looking like a twat that I'm drunk. I mean, this is like royalty right here. And I'm looking like a fucking tit.
I still think that Drew looks like...
alias is royalty.
Yeah, you know, he's up there.
Who else has been bot royalty now, huh?
I'm not going to say that right now.
No, Pops, he's in pop royalty.
Well, you only want to say it because you feel like you're going to get, you know, thrown into the royal family here.
Well, obviously, but who else?
Like the Queen Mother.
I feel like we've got...
It's going to be Patrick the Tall, isn't it?
No, of course not. I mean, I'll fangirl out about him, but that's about it. Jed over here sings the best fucking songs you'll ever hear. So listen to him. All of you kids out there. Alright? We've got Ted Hard, whose birthday it is. Happy birthday, Ted Hard, you fucking legend.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Exactly, happy birthday. We got the young Rhaegar out here playing ball.
Rhaegar looks so fucking unimpressed.
Rhaegar is more interested in this ball than he is in you. Apologies.
Oh. Shouldn't it be John Connington?
He's actually not that fucking
Yeah, he is, but...
Oh, jeez.
Right, yeah. Sorry, guys. I'm the past... No, I really apologise. I hope you have a great podcast. Wait.
Guys, we're going to leave you to your podcast because this is evidently ending rapidly. Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank
Bye.
You.
Wow.
Did we capture all that?
Oh.
That was special.
Woo!
We did. Yes, we did.
Great after show material.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we did. Yeah, that'll be fun. Fun. Yeah. Wow. I think I got a little bit drunk just from podcast.
Osmosis.
I'm like, I can't even form a thought right now. Okay, wow.
So confused. so much British. It's like they turn it down when they talk to us.
They clearly do.
Yeah, they do. They're like, okay. Must speak.
We got a glimpse in their natural habitat there.
Fuck Billy.